Welcome or welcome back to Horse for Whore. I'm Mariah.
And I'm Kayla.
And this week we are discussing a honeymoon. And also my Yay. Absurd sinus infection. I'm so sorry.
I don't know that it'll translate. It's fine.
I hope it doesn't because it will not go away.
And this is also the final episode of season two.
And it's our Christmas episode, so Merry Christmas, you whores. This is for all of you stuck through. This year is a little chaotic, not gonna lie. Season three, also known as next year, will hopefully be better. So let's hear about a honeymoon. I have two caveats. The first is actually a shout out to a reporter named Joshua Hammer, who wrote a story in The Atavist, where the majority of this research comes from. So shout out to The Atavist. They're like an independent journal. And I think Josh really, you know, nailed it on the head. But because the name's Joshua Hammer. Wow. Okay, so the second one is a lot of this takes place in South Africa. So I'm going to try really hard to pronounce all the names correct. I'm trying. That's all I can say. All right. The township of Khayelitsha sits on the southeastern outskirts of Cape Town in the middle of the Cape Flats, which is a dust bowl of nearly 200 square miles.
That little old thing.
Yeah, and it's actually the fastest growing township in South Africa, but it's also one of the poorest. So on Saturday, November 13th, 2010, when a government employee found a foreigner standing on his doorstep, it was clear that something had gone very wrong. The man was pacing back and forth on his porch and was wearing an expensive-looking suit over an open-collared shirt. He was Indian, and he'd been stumbling down the road, knocking frantically on doors, saying, "Excuse me, is there a police station where I can report a hijack?"
Okay.
The government employee reached for his phone and asked the man where the car was. The visibly distraught stranger mumbled that he didn't know and that he was also uncertain by its model. And so by the time the officers from the South African Police Service arrived, the stranger had regained enough composure to tell his story.
Okay.
So the stranger's name was Shireen Dewani, and he was a 30-year-old businessman from England.
I don't like that now the people that we're talking about are now going to be younger than me.
I know.
Like, the older people that we're talking about are now younger than me, so we're going to have to start going up in ages, you know? No. No.
So, Shireen and his wife, Annie, of 3 weeks, had just arrived in Cape Town, South Africa, the previous day to celebrate their honeymoon. And Kayla, I actually dropped some photos of Shireen and Annie in... I don't know how to describe them. I think they're both just, like, a cute, literally a gorgeous power couple. Like, that's the only way to describe them.
Yeah, and I love... This is at their wedding,
the photos.
I love this wedding attire.
Yeah.
It's so pretty.
So, earlier that evening, the couple had actually embarked with a driver on a private tour of the townships. The police noted that this tour was an unusual choice for a pair of wealthy tourists because... The outlying slums are virtually on another planet. So I called them a power couple because they are multimillionaires. And they were staying at a $700 a night waterfront hotel.
Jesus.
According to Shireen, at about 10:45 p.m., the Dewani's driver had stopped at an intersection in a township that was 7 miles west. Wow, that was 7 miles west of Khayelitsha. When suddenly, two armed men appeared out of the darkness and took control of the vehicle. So they came in with guns, they started telling their driver where to go, and after driving for some time, they forced the driver out, in which one of them took control of the car and kept going.
This is not really going to be that, like, weird, just because if you're, like, a rich couple... I assume that they look rich.
Yes. Yeah.
In a poor area.
For 45 minutes, they drove through the night as Shireen and Annie huddled in the back seat. Finally, the hijackers came to a stop on the sandy road and threw Shireen out of the car, speeding off with Annie. So at this point in our story, Shireen has no idea where his wife is. The police took down his story and escorted him back to his hotel room while dozens of police officers began searching the nearby townships, according to, you know, Shireen's story. Early the following morning, the police received a call from a resident of a neighborhood in Khayelitsha stating that a gray Volkswagen minivan had been sitting alongside the road all night and that they'd never seen that vehicle before. When the officers went to the minivan, they opened the rear right door and peered in. Lying across the back seat was the body of a young woman who had been shot once at point-blank range in the neck. The bullet from a 9mm pistol was lodged in the seat, and police knew immediately that this was Annie Dewani. Let's talk about Annie and Shireen. 3.5 weeks prior to her murder, on October 19th, 2010, 300 guests gathered on the lawn overlooking Powai Lake, which is a reservoir outside of Mumbai in India. Under a full moon, Annie Dewani's uncle, brother, and two cousins carried her down the path on a golden chair with poles resting on their shoulders. Annie wore an emerald green bridal sarari with gold and silver bangles around her wrist. She stepped down from the chair and walked to the mandap, I think is how you say it, a canopied platform where Shireen was waiting for her. They were obviously getting married, and all the images from their wedding looks like a literal fairy tale. I'm pretty sure it was a traditional Indian wedding, so they had 3 days of celebrations, and I'd read that it cost $250,000 to have their fucking wedding.
Yeah, I believe it.
From the photos, you could just see from Annie's outfits, like, she looks wealthy and good. She looks great.
Yeah, like, these weddings are so out there. They're so pretty, though. I love them.
Like a fairy tale. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Vinod Hindocha, Annie's father, looked on proudly as his youngest daughter got married. The son of a trader who had left India as a young man, Vinod had grown up in Uganda as a member of the country's close-knit Indian community. When he was just 23 years old, in 1972, President Amin of Uganda gave Ugandans of South Asian descent just 90 days to leave the country. And I'd never heard of this. Like, I hate to sound so ignorant, but I'd literally never heard. I didn't know that they had a big Indian population at one time there, or still do. I had no idea.
I also didn't.
The Hindocha family fled and settled in the small town of Mariestad, Sweden. And Vinod had actually thrived there. He started a business, raised 3 kids, 2 daughters, and 1 son. And he had hoped that his children would think of themselves as Indian, even though they lived their lives far away from the subcontinent. He insisted that they speak Gujarati around the house, and he was thrilled to learn that Annie had decided to be married in Mumbai, India. Annie was 28 years old on her wedding day, and she was described as a bright, outgoing, and beautiful young woman. Vinod actually, you know, he admitted that he spoiled his youngest daughter, but he said that he couldn't help himself. When she moved to Stockholm after graduating college, he brought her a brand new Volvo and a brand new apartment in, like, a really posh area of the city. So when Annie began looking for her husband, she had made up her mind that he would be Indian and he would be wealthy and probably good-looking. Mm-hmm. She decided that Stockholm didn't have what she needed, so she spent her weekends casually flying back and forth to London and staying with her rich family.
Yeah, I too do that on my weekends. Yeah.
So one of Annie's aunts had actually noticed Shireen Dewani at parties in London and liked his clean-cut looks, his wealth, and his family's reputation. a mutual acquaintance actually provided the aunt his phone number, and she arranged an informal run-in between him and Annie at a coffee bar.
We call that a blind date.
And they hit it off well! So in September of 2009, they went on their very first date. Which, like, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. Their lives were practically mirror images of each other. Shireen Dewani's family, like Annie's, was Gwudajardi, and his mother and her parents had fled Uganda for England. So Shireen's father was actually of Indian descent as well, and he studied in London, and he later opened a pharmacy and several nursing homes that actually went on to become a whole chain of nursing homes called PSP Healthcare.
Oh, interesting.
Shireen graduated from an elite preparatory school, and he actually studied accounting at the University of Manchester. Shireen, like Annie, was also well-traveled. After graduating, he spent several months in Ghana, actually teaching English and mathematics to the residents. He moved to London for a short time before eventually taking over the family business, PSP Healthcare. And by the time he was 30, Shireen was a multi-millionaire. So Shireen was also really social and popular. Some people actually found him to be a show-off. But beneath all of his, you know, flashy facade, his close-knit friends found, like, you know, a kind person. And that's what Annie really liked. Annie's sister Amy would later recall that the way she could laugh and joke with him and the way that he cared for her and tried to protect her was really what Annie was looking for, and she thought she'd found it.
That's good.
Yeah, so their first date was in September of 2009, and by February of 2010, Annie gave up her job in Stockholm and actually moved to an apartment in London to be closer to Shireen. Shortly thereafter, Shireen actually took Annie to an airfield outside Bristol where a private plane was waiting to fly them to Paris.
I want to go on a private plane one time.
Me too! Okay, so that night they ate, you know, they ate, they shopped, they stayed at the Ritz where a waiter presented Annie with a silver platter that held a single rose in a $40,000 engagement ring.
What? $40,000?
Yes.
What does that look like?
I know. What is that like? I can't even imagine. Annie's family had actually met Shireen Dewani and all of the Dewanis, and their families got along great, and they, like, everyone thought it was, you know, a match made in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up spending their honeymoon, no surprise to us, in South Africa. So Shireen and Annie arrived at Cape Town International Airport on Friday, November 12th, 2010. Standing outside the gate with their designer luggage and their designer clothing, Shireen looked for a taxi.
Ugh, that's so dangerous.
And he caught the attention of a driver of a gray Volkswagen minivan named Zola Tongo.
I bet.
Zola, what used to be an insurance consultant and building inspector, but he'd recently taken on a full-time job as a limousine driver, and he would outsource his van on the weekends and on the nights, which is what brought him to the airport.
Yeah.
So, Cape Town's airport had recently been remodeled in anticipation of the World Cup that was coming the summer of Shireen and Annie's honeymoon, like the following year.
They remodeled an airport for it?
Oh, yeah, that's what they're doing here in KC, girl. We're getting getting the World Cup. Our airport has been completely, they're redoing roads here, everything. Like, for one, we're getting, like, it's a tour of the U.S., and they're coming to KC, and yeah, they're remodeling the fucking city for it, which, like, that's so really cool. It's going to bring in a ton of money, so yeah, you might as well make it look cute.
Yeah. But also just to, like, expand and be able to hold that many more people.
Yeah.
That's so smart.
And, okay, this is, I know that KC's moving up, because when you go in the airport bathroom, it tells you how many stalls are open and how many stalls are being used.
I love it. Yeah,
and all the stalls, they're not gendered. It's just like go in, it's just like, here's a bathroom. None of them are. Yeah, it's really cool. It's a really nice airport.
That's awesome.
So, the airport was just about a 20-minute drive from the Waterfront Cape Grace Hotel. You remember the one that's $700 a night where Shireen and Annie were staying. Before Tongo dropped the Dewanis off at the hotel, Shireen made plans for him to come and pick them up the following night for dinner. So the couple spent their day relaxing, hanging out at the pool, and prepping so that they were ready for when Tongo arrived at 7:30. When he picked them up, Annie and Shireen climbed into the back seat of the minivan just as they had the day before. Shireen had actually had the hotel set up a reservation at this super nice restaurant called 96 Winery Road. However, while they were on the way to the restaurant, Shireen and Annie were talking and they were like, we don't really want to stay out late. We don't want to eat a full meal. Like, let's not go to the place that we originally wanted to go to, you know? And so Tongo said, like, yeah, if you guys actually want to experience Africa, if you want, like, a lighter fare, I know of a downscale restaurant named the Surfside Restaurant. So the couple were like, yeah, let's go. They agreed to it. Tongo began driving them through the road. He had to actually veer off of the main highway because there's one highway from the airport and into the city. So he was actually on, like, side roads. Around 10:15, the couple left the Surfside Restaurant, according to Shireen's account. The plan then would actually be to retire to the waterfront district where their hotel was and for a drink and basically, like, you know, drink and then head back to the hotel.
You said what time?
Around 10:15 now.
Okay.
So it's still, like, a little early for normal people. That's late as hell for me, but that's early for some people. Yeah, I'm like, past nine, yeah, I'm like, no. That's like, it's a night. Like, wrap it up.
Yeah. We gotta go. That's late. What do you mean?
But, according to Shireen, quote, Annie grew up in Sweden and felt as if the area around this hotel was just like at home. So clean and safe, a bit sterile. She wanted to see the real Africa, end quote.
Mm. Okay.
And they told him that. They told Tongo that. So Tongo agreed, and he said, sure, I will take you on a tour of all the neighborhood townships. So that's how the couple actually ended up where they were where the minivan was found.
Yeah. That's not necessarily sus. Like, that is something that tons of people, like, you don't want to be in the touristy area.
I mean, I do.
In some places you do for safety, but, like.
Yeah, but I could see some people saying, like, I don't want to be in the touristy areas. Like, show me the real part of this country, which, not me, because I'm not brave, so. At about 11 p.m. on Saturday, November 13th, 2010, the phone rang at the Hindocha house in Sweden. Vinod answered, and on the other end was Prakash Dewani, Shireen's father. He had just talked to Shireen and told Vinod, quote, Annie's been kidnapped. A few minutes later, the phone rang, and this time it was Shireen calling from Cape Grace. Quote, Dad, I could not take care of your daughter. So the next morning, Vinod obviously caught the first flight out of Sweden and met Prakash at the gate in Amsterdam for a flight to Cape Town. It was actually during this stop where Vinod had actually learned that Annie's body had been found. Over the year that he'd known them, Vinod's relationship with the Dewani family was, you know, all pleasantries. When Annie first told her father about Shireen in the fall of 2009, he'd actually reached out to his contacts to investigate. That's, like, such a dad thing, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And also, they come from a really tight-knit community, so they're going to be like, hey, have you ever heard of these people, you know? Like, I don't know, it's just kind of cute. So, an aunt in the family actually vouched for the Dewanis, telling Vinod that they were a good family. Like the Hindochas, the Dewanis were Lohanas, which is basically the merchant caste of the Indian hierarchy system.
Okay.
when Shireen first met the, or when the Hindochas first met Shireen in November of 2009, they were struck by how handsome he was and how respectful he was. When he first met them, he actually knelt down and touched their feet in a gesture of respect and humility. Which, oh my god, if I had a man do that, I would be like, oh my god, give me a baby now. Still, Annie was concerned that her parents would find fault with one aspect of Shireen. She was not his first fiancé.
Oh, okay.
Years earlier, when Shireen was younger, he'd actually proposed to the daughter of the multimillionaire who founded the Indian budget line SpiceJet.
Okay.
The couple announced their engagement, and they had this huge, extravagant party in London. However, just 1 month later, the couple called off the engagement, and a close friend attributed it to, quote, petty family squabbles.
Okay, so the families just didn't get along.
Yeah. Wanting to clear the air of all of that, Annie had actually urged her father to have Shireen explained what happened. According to Vinod, him and Shireen actually took, like, a guy's trip. And Vinod said, Dad, you can ask me anything you want about my personal life.
Yeah.
And Vinod actually chose not to talk about the ex-engagement. He said that Annie and Shireen were seeming to get a fine, or were seeming to get along fine, and he had no desire to stir up basically the past.
That's super nice of him, but also, like, maybe that was, like, yeah, I'm being ridiculous, but, like, maybe that's exactly what Shireen thought would happen.
Yeah. Well, Vinod told Shireen, quote, look, I don't want to know about your background. I just want to know, do you love my Annie? I'm happy with that. All I want for you two is to be happy. Which, like, it would be hard if I had a kid and they were like, this is the love of my life. Like, I know that he did this. Please, like, meet him, you know? I don't know. I'm a sucker. I'm a pushover, so.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. He's being very supportive, which is great.
Shireen told Vinod that he loved Annie very much and that he would, quote, take care of her. And when the two men returned to the house, Vinod allegedly told Annie that Shireen is a good boy and gave her the go-ahead, like the green light to get married. So after Annie disappeared and her body was found, the most elite police force in South Africa actually took charge of her investigation. They're known as the Hawks, which is, that's kind of cool. I'm a little nerd, so. The Hawks were actually responsible for, like, higher profile crimes, so corruption and organized crimes. So a murder in this area, which has a high murder rate, it sees more than 1,000 murders a year, would not have ordinarily been the Hawks' responsibility. As we've said before, you know, tourism, if your economy depends on it, it's a big thing, and they're rich as fuck. So, of course, they're not going to let that happen. During their investigation, the police actually found two really great pieces of evidence. They found two fingerprints on the back fender of that Volkswagen minivan, and they were actually linked to a man named Mingeni. I think is how you say it. Ngeni? Okay. I'm going to go with Ngeni. M-N-G-E-N-I. Ngeni.
Hello?
According to Paul Hendrickski, who was the leader of the police force, he had actually wondered from the beginning if this entire incident was something more than a carjacking gone wrong.
Okay.
For instance, he was wondering, why did the Duanis ride from the airport with Tongo rather than the Cape Grace Hotel car service?
That is a great question.
And the biggest question he had is, why would, you know, even these wealthy tourists, why would they have gone to one of Cape Town's most dangerous townships after dark?
Yeah. Another great question.
So the police actually ended up finding Ngeni, and he confessed to his involvement in the killing almost immediately.
Okay.
He told the police that he had an accomplice, a man named Mwawi, who, luckily, the police found just 2 days later.
This is so easy for them. Hello?
After his arrest, Mwawi, too, quickly admitted to his role in this murder.
Okay, so how much were they paid?
What are you talking about, Kayla? This is a honeymoon of two couples who love each other.
Okay.
On November 20th, as 1,500 guests were gathering in a London concert hall for Annie's memorial service, the police issued a warrant for a third suspect. Mm-hmm. It was Zola Tongo, the Dewani's driver.
Okay.
On November 22nd, Tongo was actually escorted to court and to face charges. From the beginning of the investigation, little things about Sharon had started to eat away at Vinod.
Okay, like what? What are these things?
Sharon had allegedly hosted a pizza party the night before Annie's funeral, which Vinod found inappropriate. He had quarreled with Amy over who would dress Annie's body for the funeral, and then had actually blocked Annie from being allowed to speak at her sister's service.
That's ridiculous.
His family had hired Max Clifford, a well-known London press agent, to handle all the press that was coming their way, which... That one's not quite unusual because they're so rich, you know? Like, yeah. Of course you have someone who can manage the press.
Yeah. The husband did that?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
That I don't consider that really.
Shireen's brother had allegedly demanded that Annie's father, or her family as a whole, sign an agreement not to comment to the media without consulting their media agent, but Annie's father actually refused. In the weeks after Annie's death, Shireen had recounted the events to several newspapers, but there were slight inconsistencies.
Okay.
Allegedly.
Why do you have a media consultant and you have inconsistencies?
I know. Don't say a word, bro.
Not a very good job, you know?
Yeah.
How much are you paying them?
Shireen told a reporter that it was Annie's idea to visit the township, but in an interview with a separate news agency, he said that it had been Tongo's idea to take the trip to, quote, see some African dancing, and that both he and Annie were hesitant about this plan originally. Also, Shireen had told one news reporter that he was thrown out of the vehicle's back door while the car was moving. But in a separate interview, he said, quote, "They couldn't get me out because the child locks were activated, so they ended up dragging me struggling and screaming out of the window," end quote.
We got child locks activated?
So the Daily Mail had quoted unnamed sources saying that the police were puzzled over how either one of those things could have happened because Sharon had zero visible injuries.
Yeah.
And so while a small case against Sharon was building, the police in South Africa kept moving forward with the charges against the South African men. On December 7th, 2010, at 9 a.m., Tongo was led into the court for trial, which Vinod actually attended. The prosecutor stood in front of the magistrate with a signed confession from Tongo and read aloud, stating, quote, "The deceased was murdered at the instance of her husband," end quote.
Ooh.
Even by the standard of South Africa's murder capital, which was the township that they were in, the crime was remarkable. According to Tongo's confession, shortly after the driver had taken the Dewanis from the airport to the hotel, Shireen had taken him aside and confided that he wanted, quote, "a client of his taken off the scene." Tongo recounted, quote, "I understood that he wanted someone, a woman, killed. He was willing to pay the killers 15,000 rand, which is about $791 in today's money, to carry out the murder.
What the fuck? Also, like, what? Why marry her if you're gonna kill her 3 weeks later?
And also, how lucky is it that the first person you meet in South Africa is, like, a hired killer?
Yeah, that's
one hole.
I don't think luck is in it, but sure.
The murder plot took barely 24 hours from conception to execution.
That seems rushed.
Yes. According to Tongo's confession, he first reached out to a middleman, a hotel receptionist named Mblambo, who led Tongo to Mwawe, a small-time drug dealer and occasional house party DJ. I know, I just love the detail of a DJ.
I love that resume.
I'm a drug dealer, but also a DJ.
Here's my card.
Yeah, here's some meth. Here's my card. So at noon on Saturday, Tongo met with Shireen again at the hotel, and the two men sketched the outlines of the crime. Tongo recalled, quote, "The hijacking would be simulated. The agreement was that after the hijacking of the vehicle, both Shireen Diwani and I would be ejected from the vehicle unharmed, after which the deceased would be murdered," end quote. During dinner at the Surfside restaurant, Tongo alleged that Shireen took him aside again and, quote, "wanted to know if I had arranged for the guys. I confirmed that everything had been arranged." As Annie and Shireen got into the Volkswagen and set out on the road, Tongo and Shireen sent text messages back and forth. Tongo alleged that he told Shireen, "don't forget about the money," and Shireen texted him back, assuring him that the cash was, quote, "in an envelope in a pouch behind the front seat." When the gray minivan arrived at the intersection, Ngeni positioned himself in the front seat of the vehicle, and Mwawe was at my door pointing a firearm at me, Tongo stated. The two got in the vehicle, and Shireen Diwani and I continued to pretend that we were being hijacked. I knew that Ngeni and Mwawe would not harm Shireen and that he would be dropped off at some further point. I also knew that the deceased would be kidnapped, robbed, and murdered after Shireen Diwani had been ejected from the vehicle in accordance with the plan, end quote. Police would later extract a confession from Mwawe that corroborated and expanded upon Tongo's account of the crimes. He told them that Mblambo had called him on Friday evening after the Diwanis arrived at the hotel and told him that a job needed to be done. Quote, "Tongo told me that he will bring a couple into the township and that the husband wanted the wife killed. The husband wanted the job done the same Saturday," end quote. So Shireen Diwani surrendered at the Southmead Police Station in Bristol at 10:38 p.m. on December 7th, 2010.
God, that sucks. Like, but also, fuck you for having your wife murdered. Like,
also, though, the only evidence so far is, like, literally this guy's confession. There's no hard evidence. It's just like, yeah, this is what this person said. Mm-hmm. So after 2 days in prison, Shireen was released on bond. He actually paid about $38,000, but he had to surrender his passport, and he was put on home confinement with an ankle monitor. So one of the biggest things missing in the case against Shireen was the lack of a motive.
Exactly. Like, why?
There was no insurance policy. No will, and nothing to suggest that Shireen had been interested in financial gain.
He's more rich than her family is. Why would he be?
And almost everybody who knew the couple talked of their deep affection for each other, and no one saw any signs of, like, discontent on his part.
Yeah, like, looking at their photo together, like, I just don't see, like, why.
But hold on to your britches, because The same month he was arrested, a man named Leopold Leiser approached a police station.
Okay.
Leiser?
What did you guys say?
He was a male escort and known professionally as the German Master.
Okay.
He'd seen Shireen's photographs in the newspapers and recognized him as a former client. And within days, Leiser had reportedly sold an interview to The Sun in which he claimed he'd had three sessions of, quote, kinky sex with Shireen just weeks before his wedding.
Okay, but, like, also the guy sold the interview.
Yeah, to The Sun also. That's kind of like the, that's like TMZ, like, ugh.
Mm-hmm, yeah, so, like, is there any fact-checking with that?
Well, Shireen obviously denied knowing Leiser and threatened to sue him and The Sun for defamation, as he should. But a few more weeks later, a 53-year-old political aide in Parliament also told the British investigators that he, too, had several sexual encounters with Shireen. Their rendezvous point was allegedly a gay fetish club in London called The Hoist, and he'd come forward because he was outraged by Shireen's denial of his own sexuality. Quote, the man told detectives that Dewani was a, quote, submissive who enjoyed sadomasochism and dressing up in leather.
Okay, but also, that's not your business to tell. And that
doesn't make him a killer.
Also, yeah, and seriously, like, the culture.
Yeah.
In India and other countries.
He can't be,
like,
gay.
That could get him killed. So maybe shut the fuck up, whether it's true or not. It's not your business to tell.
And there are well-respected, like, yeah, rich, like, family.
You're gonna shame his whole fucking family. Like, stop that.
No, yeah. I agree. It's really messed up. Yeah.
It doesn't matter his sexual orientation or, like, anything that he's doing. So, like, that does not correlate to him murdering his wife. Unless his wife found out, was gonna say something, and then he's like, oh no.
Yeah. The idea that Shireen's double life would prompt him to murder his new wife might have been far-fetched, but the Hindochas basically quickly agreed that it was probably Shireen's fault. What happened to Annie?
I don't think the sexual orientation has anything to do with it. If anything, marrying Annie would help him.
Yeah. Well, in their eyes, he was terrified of the possibility of being exposed as gay, and that scandal might have caused him to do things he wouldn't normally do. Amy told Joshua Hammer for the Atavist, quote, if Annie knew that he was gay, she would have left him. And if she found it out during the honeymoon, he would have panicked.
Would she have left him, though? Like, if she loved him as much as they said, like, there's a chance she would have just helped cover, like.
Yeah, I don't know.
We don't know, because, like, Annie's not here to tell us.
She and the other families argue that a failed marriage following Shireen's earlier broken engagement could have destroyed his family's reputation within the close-knit, deeply conservative Indian elite.
I wonder if the ex knew.
Yeah, if that he was gay? Yeah, I don't know. Or bisexual.
If he was, yeah.
So the family theorized that maybe Shireen was panicking and desperate to preserve appearances, and he decided to kill Annie rather than face a divorce. Quote,
I don't see that, but okay.
This marriage was supposed to be perfect. This is a religious family. They are very involved in society, and Shireen could not have come out openly that he was gay.
I don't know.
Interestingly, there are also unrelated incidents prior to the wedding that in retrospect appear ominous. Amy described a phone call she received from Annie 3 weeks after the wedding in which Annie told her that she wanted to call off the ceremony.
After or before the wedding?
Before the wedding, sorry.
Okay.
Quote, I've thrown back the ring. I'm not going to marry him. She told Amy that she'd moved out of the hotel room she and Shireen were sharing in India and was staying at a friend's apartment.
Why?
Apparently, he was controlling. She was sick of how Shireen berated her about petty things. Not folding dirty clothes before tossing them in the laundry basket. Which, what the fuck?
No, it is not happening.
Eating ice cream and other sweets. And leaving her belongings scattered about the room that they bought to stay in.
Okay, I'm not folding dirty clothes before I put them in the laundry. It's not happening.
No, they're getting balled up. I
fold my clothes when they come out of the laundry. Like, no, no thank you.
In late September of 2011, the British Home Secretary actually ordered Shireen's extradition to South Africa so he could stand trial. Shireen's attorney obviously appealed the decision, and 6 months later, a British judge temporarily blocked the order. He ruled that Shireen suffered from, quote, an unusual combination of PTSD and depression to such a severe degree that extradition would present a real threat to his life.
I don't think that it's unusual, but...
Yeah, I think that they were also concerned of, like, the lax standards in prison in South Africa, and obviously Shireen would stand out.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Probably be a target.
But while they were trying to get Shireen back to the country, the trial moved forward with the three South African men. In August 2011, Mwawi was sentenced to 25 years in prison in exchange for corroborating Tongo's story. He also agreed to testify as a witness in the murder trial of Ngeni, the only accomplice who didn't strike a plea deal. Mm-hmm. Also, Mblabo, the middleman, he got full immunity because he agreed to give an honest and truthful statement.
Okay, yeah. Sure thing. I would also give an honest and true statement if I got full immunity. What are you talking about?
Exactly. So, Ngeni's trial, the only trial, actually opened in August of 2012. When Mwawe took the stand against Ngeni, prosecutors showed the court a videotaped statement that he made after his arrest, which he told the same story in his written confession. Annie's killing was a murder for hire, and according to Mwawe, Ngeni had been the one to pull the trigger.
Wait. Which one got full immunity?
Mblabo, who connected the men. Ngeni and Mwawe were the two that were in the vehicle with Tongo. Okay.
And Ngeni's the one that didn't get any deal whatsoever.
No,
right?
Yeah, he's on trial, yeah.
Okay.
So Ngeni actually took the stand in his own defense, and he insisted that it was Mwawe who fired at Annie. Quote, he stopped the vehicle. He then took his firearm, and I thought we were going to leave. He climbed off the vehicle and walked around my side and opened the passenger doors right behind me. And she was sitting at the back next to the other door. He then pulled a small bag from this lady. She was hanging on crying, and she was scared. I heard one gunshot. End quote.
If that's true, that's really shitty for him.
Ngeni was actually found guilty of premeditated murder for hire, and he was sentenced to life in prison without parole.
Yep. That sucks, dude.
Meanwhile, one of the most critical pieces of evidence against Shireen, which was the text messages about the money that he and Tongo allegedly passed back and forth, had proven to be false. In court, the police were actually forced to admit that they had records that Tongo had sent text messages to Shireen on the day of Annie's murder, but none were actually during that time, and they were unable to receive the actual text messages. They just took that guy's word for it.
Okay.
And so by this point, everything is coming out about the confession and the case falling apart against Shireen, and the news were reporting a different scenario. Some reporting alleged that Tongo had sized up the Dewanis as easy marks based on their designer luggage, designer clothing, and he arranged with his accomplices for fake hijacking to rob the couple.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, the police recovered several Dewanis items from the suspects, including a Giorgio Armani watch, a diamond bracelet, a leather purse, which was Annie's, and her cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
According to the reporting, Tongo's conspirators lost control of the situation and shot Annie to death during an attempted rape. Tongo, as the theory went, then incriminated Shireen to reduce his own sentence, and the police, eager to recast the murder as a crime instigated by a foreign tourist, mm-hmm. went along with it.
Yep, that makes a lot of sense.
So after a long and lengthy legal battle, Shireen Dewani was actually extradited to the from the United Kingdom to South Africa on April 7th, 2014. He was arrested, charged, and ordered to stand trial for the alleged arranging of his murder of his wife. He pleaded not guilty, and his trial actually began on October 6, 2014. Under cross-examination, the key witnesses who alleged his involvement, Tongo, Mwawi, and Mblambo, contradicted their previous statements and each other during the so-called murder for hire. Tongo and Mblambo were found to have fabricated the text messages and phone calls and refused to identify an alleged fifth conspirator.
Mm-hmm.
On November 24, 2014, Dewani's counsel argued for the case to be dismissed, citing a lack of credible evidence, and on December 8th, 2014, that application was granted.
Good, good.
Shireen Dewani was acquitted and exonerated of all involvement in the crimes, with the judge stating, quote, "Mr. Tongo was the only witness who could link the accused to this conspiracy, gave evidence to the court which is so improbable and contained so many mistakes and lies and inconsistencies that one simply cannot know where the lies end and the truth begins."
Good.
Shireen Dewani eventually returned to his life in the UK after being acquitted. He actually made his same-sex relationship with a Brazilian photojournalist public in 2018.
Good.
The Annie Dewani case is still remembered as a terrible incident that occurred during what should have been the happiest time for the newlywed couple. The case's intricacies and issues raised concerns about the criminal justice system, witness credibility, and the pursuit of truth in high-profile court processes. And that is the story of a honeymoon.
Wow.
I don't know how to feel about that one.
I don't think I want to go on a honeymoon right now, so.
I have listened to so many podcast episodes, and I'm like, yeah, Shireen did it. And then I'm like, no, he didn't do it. And then
I don't think he did. Can you imagine that, too? Like, 4 years later, he's still having to deal with this, and, like, he didn't do it. That is so frustrating.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I don't think he did it at all.
So that's another sus death for 2023 to close it out. And season that, 2.
Yeah, that really fucking sucks.
It's terrible.
Like, she got the short end of the stick on that. Like, I'm glad that he is able to, like, come out and, you know, be who he is publicly. That's great for him. That really is great for him. It fucking sucks for her and her family.
Yeah. And there's no way that they can know the full truth just because Tongo was such a liar. All three of them. Like, at least we know at the end of the day, like, one of the two people that most likely shot her are in prison, but will never get the full true story. Yeah. And that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think that it is more likely that they were targeted because of their designer stuff.
Yeah. But so, yeah, Merry Christmas, you fuckers.
Enjoy that.
But that'll round us out, and we can't wait to talk to you guys, to interact with you guys during season 3 in 2024.
We're going to have to come up with a really good one.
I know.
Season 3, episode 1.
See you guys in 2024. Bye.
Okay, bye, guys.